We now turn our attention to a couple of political candidates. U.S. Senator John Barrasso was originally appointed to the U.S. Senate to fill the seat of the late Senator Craig Thomas. He then was elected to a four-year term in 2008. Senator Barrasso had previously served as a state senator and was a Casper orthopedic surgeon for 24 years. Barrasso has been campaigning across the state and says there's been one main topic on citizens' minds.
Specifically the debt. I mean, you have a $16 trillion national debt, and people say, why aren't we doing it like we do it here in Wyoming, where we balance our budget every year, live within our means, and Washington keeps adding to the debt, keeps spending. If you're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar you spend, and a lot of it you're borrowing from China, you say, how do you stay a strong and independent nation? And, you know, this week they had the presidential debate on foreign policy, but the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said that the greatest threat to our national security is our national debt. I hear that everywhere I go around the state.
I'm curious your approach to maybe addressing that just up front. I mean, obviously it's got to be something that you guys deal with as quickly as possible, and maybe with an election out of the way, that can in fact happen. What are going to be some of your priorities, places you'd like to take the first look?
Yeah, you know, what I'd like is a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, but that takes a number of years to get into place. I think the most simple and straightforward way is Mike Enzi's penny plan, where you actually cut by 1% the spending each year for the next 6 years. You're balanced by then. And the thing is that the government, they think when it goes up a certain percentage, that's kind of like not going up at all, but it is going up. So what we want to do is actually freeze spending and then drop it up 1% each year over the next 5 or 6 years, and that does it. And then you get a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. The real challenges are, my mom just turned 90, Bob, and we had a little birthday party for her. But when she was born in 1922, the life expectancy for a woman in the United States was 56. And now that life expectancy is 81. So in just the last 90 years, life expectancy has gone up so much. So now in terms of the looking long term, of the fact that today 10,000 baby boomers, and you and I are baby boomers of the World War II generation, and 10,000 baby boomers turn 65, and tomorrow 10,000 are going to turn 65. Yesterday 10,000 turned 65. People say they paid into Medicare, and they have. And on average, a couple retiring today will have paid in about $110,000. But with these extended life expectancies, they're going to use about $350,000 in services. So the math doesn't work. And if you want to actually save these wonderful programs for future generations, you have to say, do we have to redesign them for the next generation coming up, for people under the age of 55? And I think we do.
Now, as far as your redesign with something like Medicare, what are you thinking?
Well, I voted for the Paul Ryan approach of premium support, but not for anybody that's over age 55, just for those under age 55. And to kind of go along those lines, I've met with Alice Rivlin, who worked with Bill Clinton. I've been with Pete Domenici. They're working together on a plan. But you have to take a look at what we need to do to sustain these long term.
Senator John Barrasso visiting with us today. He, of course, is running for re-election. Senator, I want to ask you about Social Security. I get a lot of questions about that when I talk to candidates. Folks want to know what your ideas are as you look to the future of that program.
Well, people have paid in. It's their money. They have absolutely a right to expect it, and are going to, and people are going to make sure that they do get that that money. You do have to look at it and say, is that something down the line that you would look at from the standpoint of Warren Buffett? And at that level, do you say, hey, well, why does he need to get this?
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes down to the fact that when the program was put into place by FDR, there were 43 people paying in for every one person who was getting a check. And now we're at a point where it's a much smaller number, and soon it'll be three people working for every one person receiving the check. You know, I always thought that it was there was actually an account with your name on it and your money that you had paid in. But government a long time ago decided they weren't going to do it that way, and they started spending the money as it came in rather than investing it for you and holding it for you. So that it's a huge debt. Right now, it's an obligation to our citizens, and it's one of the reasons that we are in the shape that we're in with this kind of debt.
Do we need to raise the ages on maybe both this and Medicare, as far as you're concerned?
Well, I think you have to have a discussion of the whole thing and look at that. Age is certainly a way to do it. Because as we started talking about, you know, my mom's 90th birthday, and at the time that Social Security was passed, the average life expectancy for a man was 69 and a woman 71. Now it's a decade older for men and for women, and yet the rate, the age for Social Security is essentially the same.
The ACA, obviously, your stance on that is well known, and we probably don't have to revisit that a ton, but I am curious moving forward. This does seem to be one of those issues where it will depend on who the president is going to be, but are there things that you're going to say, okay, this is actually was a pretty good idea, this was a good idea, this was a good idea, that you'd like to see more or less left alone if you're going to revamp things?
The bill is 2,700 pages, the health care law. James Madison said, pass no laws so voluminous they cannot be read, nor so incoherent they cannot be understood. This bill contradicts itself. We need to take the whole thing down and then go in a step-by-step way. One of the things I think is good is for people under the age of 26 to be able to stay on their family health insurance plan for students, graduate students, people looking for work in this economy. I think that's a good thing. And at the roundtable discussion at the White House 2 years ago, I said that we could pass that day and just go right with it immediately because there was so much bipartisan support for that. So you know, there are things that we can do, but the fundamental we need health care reform because we want patients to get the care that they need from a doctor that they choose at lower cost. And what we've gotten with this health care law, even though the president promised that premiums would drop by $2,500 per family a year, what we've seen is that health care premiums under the president's law have gone up by almost $3,000 a year for families. So the president's promises, have one after another in the health care law, have been broken because what he promised Congress and promised the country in his address to Congress, I couldn't find that when I read the 2,700-page law.
Those will probably go down, though, once this kicks in and everybody has to have insurance, though, right? Aren't they just kind of making the last big kill?
Well, the president has said that, he said, if you like what you have, you can keep it. Now we see so many businesses are saying, hey, under this law, if I have fewer full-time employees, and you see this at fast food places, what is it, the restaurant, Darden restaurant chain said we're going to just have people working 29 hours because that's how you define part-time now. They're going to be cutting hours of their employees, then they're going to dump them onto the exchanges. So you're going to have people that had insurance that they liked, they can't keep it, even though the president said if you like what you have, you can keep it. And I know that Wyoming rates are going to go up from the research that Senator Enzi and I have been working on because of what's called the community rating, where, you know, if you're a 27-year-old kid and you go to the gym and you're working out three times a week or more, your rate is pegged to that of somebody who's 62 and sitting in front of their TV set and just eating Cheetos all day and not really taking care of themselves because this is not a patient-centered health care law. It's a government-centered approach with a one-size-fits-all, and that's not going to work. And so I think it's going to be very harmful for rural health, and I think we're going to be suffering significantly here in Wyoming as a result of the health care law.
Would you vote to keep pre-existing conditions, allowing people to get insurance with pre-existing conditions?
It's my wife Bobby is a breast cancer survivor. She's been through three cancer operations. She's been through chemotherapy twice. I know as a doctor as well as a husband how important it is for people with pre-existing conditions to be able to get insurance. I think there are better ways to do it than the health care law. The president said, "Well, we're going to do this for 110 million people." They set up a program, and only 80,000 people signed up for it so far. So there are things that we need to do to help people with pre-existing conditions to make sure they can get insurance, but it's not the way that this health care law does it.
So you're saying right now that you look at a health care reform, you just don't like this particular one.
Well, I think this failed for the number one job the president wanted to do, which, as he said, was to lower the cost of care and therefore lower premiums for families. I believe even though the Supreme Court has ruled that this is not unconstitutional, it's unworkable for doctors and nurses and hospitals. It continues to be unpopular, and it is unaffordable for a nation with a $16 trillion debt.
U.S. Senator John Barrasso, always nice chatting with you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bob.